Good morning. I heard about a fellow preacher that was newly appointed to serve a church down south. And so on his first few Sundays there, he wanted to make his way around to all the classes and kind of just get to know the church. And one Sunday he was in the first and third grade class, little ones, you know. And he went in there and he just trying to get to know these kids. And he said, "Kids, would one of you want to tell me why you love God?" It's pretty quiet. A little voice in the back of the room spoke up. He said, "Well, I reckon it just runs in the family." It's not a bad answer, really. I mean, that's actually a good thing. And so today, we've seen the beginning of that process with our Child Dedication Sunday. And we're going to talk about what it means for the love of God to run in the family, as it were, when we talk about the family lens. So I've asked Nick, our student pastor, to help me preach this sermon today. Nick, thank you for being part of this. Grateful.
Thanks for letting me jump in.
Yeah.
Casey has been leading us through the series called Lenses on the importance of forming a Christian worldview. We've hit on several of those different lenses, but on this National Sanctity of Life Sunday, we thought it would be a good opportunity to take a look at the family lens. Yeah. The family is the first and foremost essential unit of society. It was ordained by God in the Garden of Eden. And while it is, we want it to be, the source of life's most intense joys, we all know that because of sin, sometimes it can also be a source of painful sorrows. But what's amazing to me, when we think about all the ways that God could have used to relate to us, his creation, the creator to the creation, the language that he chose, the language that he invited us to use, that he invited us into, was to relate to him as a father, as his children, as his sons and daughters. I love that. I love the intimacy of that. And his intent from the beginning was that it was supposed to be a source of rich blessing. But as we know, it's this tension that we weighed, because while we appreciate the blessing, we also know the pain, and that's something that all of us can relate to, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, probably everybody in here, right? Like, some of your greatest joys have been with family, and some of your biggest hurts have been with family, right? And it's because of that reality that church is so important. We function, church, as kind of a found family. Have you heard that term? It's this idea that these are people that you're not related to by blood, but, you know, because of your connection. And sometimes, you know, it's because they're not blood family, right? That they become like family to you, that we treat each other like family that way. Beyond that, the family image throughout Scripture is so strong to describe not only God's relationship to us, Father and his children, but also our relationship to each other. And so that's why the family lens is so critical. It helps us understand not only our most basic relationships in this world, but also the kind of relationships that we're supposed to have. And so we're going to look at a couple passages today that illustrate that. First of all, one in the Gospels and then one in the Law of Moses. First one we're going to turn to is in Matthew chapter 12, verse 46. So if you want to open your Bibles to Matthew 12, 46. I just want to take a second and thank you all for being here today. I know it was cold and snowy out there. Grateful for those in the room. Thankful for those watching online. Appreciate you logging in. And whether you're here in the room or online, take a second, fill out your connection card. I want to highlight a couple things. I'm going to turn it over to Nick to let you know about some stuff going on. First of all, our Wired experience is 2 weeks from today. Starts the first Sunday in February on the 6th. And so if you're interested in finding out more about Chapel Rock, or just like, man, I like this church, I want to get plugged in, how do I do that? Wired. You need to sign up for Wired. You can do that at chapelrock.org/events. And so I want to encourage you to do that. And then also, I want to ask you to keep the Lynch and Hintz families in your prayers. If you hadn't heard, our brother Larry Lynch went to be home with the Lord this week. So remember to pray for Joanne and Corey Hintz, our campus manager here on staff. His grandmother Shirley passed away this past week. And so if you would, just please keep both of those families in your prayers. A lot going on family-wise. So Nick, you want to kind of fill everybody in on that?
Yeah, three things family ministry-wise. One's in your bulletin, something that Daniel and Sherry have been putting together in their team, a parent connection night that's coming up February 11th. So maybe you saw some people on stage that you haven't had the opportunity to meet, even here this morning. You realize, like, wow, we're in similar stages of life together. The Parent Connection Night, February 11th. There's more details in your bulletin or online, chapelrock.org.
/kids.
Not events.
Yeah.
Typo. This is where you'll find it, but you can get registered for that. It's going to be a great evening coming up. The second thing I want to let you know about, just a blessing for us as those that work with students and kids, Youth for Christ is hosting a training conference this next Saturday for their ministry leaders, but they've invited anybody that's part of Chapel Rock to come along and jump in on that thing. So you can come and be equipped as a youth worker, or, you know, as someone, maybe just your rhythm of what you do day in and day out with your 9-to-5 in schools or as a teacher or whatever is working with kids. Great opportunity just to get to be equipped alongside some national experts that are going to be helping to lead that conference. And then the third thing I want to mention.
So if they want to do that, what do they do?
Just see me, email me, talk to me afterwards, and we'll make sure that we get you there. And then the third thing is something that we've created that's an experience for parents and kids or grandparents and grandchildren, or maybe even just like an adult mentor and somebody that you're walking with to be able to experience together. So this is something called Iron Sharpens Iron, and we use blacksmithing to create an experience where you can come and just experiential discipleship, project-based discipleship. So that's coming up in February. You can also find out about that on chapelrock.org/events and get registered for that. Got to sign up with your son or daughter or grandchild together. So exciting stuff happening in the family, but also certainly praying for those experiencing loss and doing family business like we do, right?
Yeah. Goodness. 100 years ago, early part of the 20th century, there was a preacher, a great preacher named George Buttrick, and he preached a sermon from Matthew 12 on what we're going to talk about today. And in that sermon, he said this: is church membership a family and Christian discipleship a home? It should be so. Within the church, the lowly should find understanding, security, mutual love, and the challenge of the kingdom. For the followers of Christ are a family, and he uses this phrase, around the feet of God. And he's referencing the story that we're going to look at in our text today. In both the Gospels, we're going to look at a passage from Matthew, and the Mosaic Law, we're going to look at a passage from Deuteronomy, the Lord shows us that the proper lens for us to look at how a church should function is the lens of the family. And that we're supposed to look back through that lens the other way to see that our homes ought to be discipleship factories. Our homes ought to be cranking out disciples. See, that's the big idea this morning, that Jesus intends for us to see home life and church life through each other's lens. So we brought some lenses. They're almost like magnifying glasses here.
I love the way you've been doing this with different things throughout this series.
I hope I don't run out.
The 3D glasses, right. And all the different things. So today, the image is with a magnifying glass, and the idea is as you look at one through the other, as I look through Casey here, through the magnifying glass,
right,
at Casey,
yeah, right, yeah.
You know, you see something that is magnified beyond just, you know, what one does from one side. So as we look at the church through the lens of family and the family through the lens of church, each have something to magnify one another.
I know you can't all see this, but here's what's happening. So when I look through magnifying and he's magnifying, what happens is Nick is crystal clear, and for a while you let it drift, and I saw you guys over there, like you look way closer, right? So that's too far away. So what happens is everything through the lens is crystal clear. It's flipped upside down. But I don't get that. Next week is the science lens. We'll figure it out next week. But that's not how it works, man.
Okay.
Won't change a thing. Anyway, everything through the lens is crystal clear. Everything around it is really blurry. Everything outside that green and black circle is really, really blurry. It's this amazing thing where we use these lenses and we look back at these things. And so What I think we're going to see, a couple things today. So we got these two lenses. It's the same lens, the 10x magnification, same lens, but we use them to look back at each other, right? So here's the first thing. Number one is the church should feel like family. The church should feel like family. Did you know that the most common term in the New Testament for the followers of Jesus, what occurs more frequently than anything else, is the Greek word adelphoi, literally translated brothers. Okay, but it was not a gender exclusive term, right? So when the translators, you'll see this in your 2011 NIV Bible, it's brothers and sisters is how they translate it, right? But it's brothers over and over and over again, almost 250 times in the New Testament. The church is referred to as brothers and sisters, family. It's family language. And Jesus is the one who established that framework. Look with me at Matthew 12. Look at this. It says, while Jesus was still talking to the crowd, his mother and brothers stood outside wanting to speak to him. Someone told him, your mother and brothers are standing outside wanting to speak to you. He replied to him, who is my mother? Who are my brothers? Pointing to his disciples, and that word probably just means he gestured to them. He swept his arm across the group. Here are my mother and my brothers. For whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother. Now this comes right on the heels of Jesus healing a bunch of people and casting a demon out of a man who was deaf and mute, couldn't hear or speak, right? And this crowd that he's talking to has gathered because of those events, because of the miracles. The crowd is here. They're all crammed into this house, right? And Jesus is there talking to him. His family thinks he's nuts. It says that they came to take charge of him. They thought he was crazy because he's doing all these miracles and he's teaching, and he's healing, and he's not resting. He's just working so hard. And so they show up, and Jesus basically says, no, 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 no. This is my family. What he's doing is he's redefining the whole nature of family. He's centering it around the priorities of missional discipleship. The interesting thing here, and you don't see this in the English text, but in the original language, every single time the phrase mother and brothers is used, the Greek word idou pops up. It's the word that we would translate behold or look. Jesus is using vision language. He's using lenses language. Look, look at this, see this. And he doesn't seem to care if he offends his biological family. Because in his mind, the church is family. The New Testament scholar Craig Keener made a comment about this. He said, thinking of one's co-religionists, that's the word he used. I can barely spell it. He means fellow disciples, okay? Thinking of one's fellow disciples as brothers and sisters in the ancient world was common. Respecting older people as mothers and fathers was common. But allowing ties in the religious community to take precedence over family bonds was unheard of in Judaism. They didn't do that. What Jesus is doing here is utterly revolutionary. He's saying, this found family, that's what counts. Then the church ought to function like family. He said that the people who do the will of God together are family. The church ought to feel like that. In a day and time when families are increasingly broken, the church ought to feel like family. Each week we've been recommending a couple books, and the first one I want to recommend to you is a book by Rosaria Butterfield. She's got an amazing story. We don't have time to tell it today. But it's called The Gospel Comes with a House Key. And I don't have it in print. I have it on my Kindle because I wanted to highlight and make notes and copy and paste. It's that good. This is one of those books that... it will motivate you and kick your tail all at the same time. It's kind of both. To practice hospitality and to treat your like, to bring people in to your family. And she says this, all around you, people hunger for the covenant of God to include them. And the way that that happens is when the church feels like family. So I just want to give you a vision, and her book does that fantastically, but I also want you to just hear from real life experience in ways that that has happened. So Nick, just talk to us about things that you've seen. For those of you who are new, I've been here a little over 6 years. Nick's been here for like 468 or something like that. Like 20 years? Okay. I'm older than Nick, but he's been around Chapel Rock longer than me. Just talk to us from your experience here, ways that you've seen this body be like family.
Yeah, you know, so many ways. I think it boils down to people loving people well, you know, in the moments where that's just lived out. Sometimes it's in the ups, sometimes it's in the valleys of life. Sometimes it's in moments where you're celebrating together, like this morning. We all got to kind of just, you know, be in on that moment, right? Where it's, you know, you're so excited for what's ahead for these families, and you're going, okay, yeah, and it's going to take all of us, so we're with you.
Yeah.
But sometimes just showing up, and it might be in a way that is not what you at first planned. Telling a story earlier about a group that happens on Monday nights that Nicole, my wife, helps lead. That's her job with Youth for Christ and Parent Life, to create groups of mentors that come alongside pregnant and parenting teen moms and dads. And we had a dad's group that was meeting, and young dad was there, and Richard Adams, and Robert, why am I blanking?
Miller,
help out with that group, and we're there ready to go. Robert and I are there with this young man, and we got the word from Rhonda that Richard, he has some pretty tough back problems sometimes, and wasn't able to make it. Wanted more than anything to, but was at home, like, literally, like, on the ground flat because of back pain. And we had this moment, it's like, do you keep going with the program thing that you got going? Or, like, maybe the most important thing is to, like, you know, let's get in the car and go be with Richard. We don't know what that's going to look like. So we take Xavier, this young man, and jump in the car with Robert, and we go. I think we had to let ourselves in the garage code, you know, and there was Richard on the floor. But for a young man to see two other men just go, like, hey, we don't know what we got right here, but we can pray. We can lift you before the Father, and we can join together with you. You know, sometimes it's just bringing people alongside to experience things. It's like, that wasn't the main thing for tonight, but that's what needed to happen. You know, and to have moments like that where even in the valleys we see God put on display. You know, just that value of relationship and love, that just each of us wants somebody to meet us where we're at, right? You know, and whatever we're going through.
I mean, that's the way a healthy family works, right? Like, sometimes you just have to drop your agenda and love somebody.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I see that in so many different ways where people just love one another well. I'm reminded of a time, and, you know, I so appreciate what we have the opportunity to experience when we're in this room in worship and all the amazing ways that, you know, God is glorified through that. But I'll tell you, one of the most powerful worship experiences I can remember recently is a time where we were gathered together with fellow brothers and sisters in a living room, and we were praising God for his provision in the life of the family of Andrea and Adam Reese. And their little one Elliot, had been born premature, spent weeks in the ICU, and didn't know at times. It was just like touch and go. But as he was strong enough to eventually come home, and those that were so excited for them to welcome that first child, you know, just came together to go like, hey, you know, I mean, I guess a baby shower should be in order, but, like, we just need to come together and worship for what God has done, you know, in the life of this family, you know, and moments like that where you're just, you're coming alongside people, and it's in the valleys, it's on the mountaintops, but just celebrating God's faithfulness. You know, sometimes it's just ordinary, everyday ways. As we were talking about this, Nicole, my wife, was sharing a story about a presentation that she was given recently to a group of social workers that were gathered. And afterwards, Amy Lewis organized that. And afterwards, this lady came up to her and said, man, I know you from somewhere. And, you know, if you've ever done that with someone, you're just like, where is it? You know, is it, you know, I know we know this. So they, you know, kind of went through some things. And eventually she realized, she's like, it's Chapel Rock. Like, hey, I used to come to that thing that you guys hosted called the Fifth Quarter back in the day when I was young. And the fifth quarter, if you don't know, is something we just did after the football games for Ben Davis. We'd open up the gym, have some food, just kind of create a safe space where people could come and just be together, and we could just extend radical hospitality to our neighbors. So this young lady at the time was a little too young to like get in because we had like an age, you know, range. But, you know, Nicole and John Holzapple were like the bouncers at the doors, like checking ID. So they're kind of softies a little bit, you know. So she was with her older brothers and sisters. So they're like, come on, you know, just come on in. And but she's recounting this story like years later, 10, 15 years later, going, You don't realize how much of a refuge that was for me at a time where my family was just a wreck. You know, a time where my family was in turmoil, you know, you guys created a space and let me be a part of it, and it was just awesome. I just want you to know how much that meant to me. And you know, it's like sometimes we don't realize it, right? You know, it's like someone comes over and, you know, if you want them to feel like family in your house, it's like, hey, you know, you want a glass of milk, you know where the fridge is, right? Get in there and
they have refrigerator rights.
Right, yeah. You know, and sometimes it's in those ordinary, everyday ways that we as a church body just love one another well. Mm-hmm. You know, you might not be thinking, it might be making a huge impact at the moment, but, you know, the ripples go out for years to come in ways that it just impacts people's lives.
Yeah, you know, I think another way, and I mean, this is National Sanctity of Life Sunday. You guys have heard me say from this stage that to me, the abortion issue is not a political issue. It's an exegetical issue. In the Mosaic Law, in the Law of Moses, God uses the word when writing law about a woman who is pregnant, an unborn child, God uses the word for, not fetus, child. As far as I'm concerned, it's not a political issue. It's an exegetical issue. God has spoken. He used the word. As far as God is concerned, a child in the womb is a person. And that settles the issue for me. I don't really care what Congress does. But here's the thing. So do I want to see Roe v. Wade limited or changed in some way? Yeah, I think abortion is a moral evil. I do believe it's murder. But, what is the law of unintended consequences? So we stop it. Now what? Got a lot of young women going to have a baby. Who's taking the kid? You taking the kid? How can we love that young woman who made a very hard decision? What if the church became known as the place where I know abortion's wrong, but I don't think I can raise this kid. I'm going to the church. Do you know how that's how the church grew in the beginning? Do you know what the church did in the early days? The Romans, if they didn't want a child, would take it to the dump and leave it there. It's called exposure. Happened all the time in the ancient world. You know what the church would do? They'd go to the dump and pick up the babies and take them home and raise them as their own. That'll grow a church real quick. And part of the reason the church grew so explosively in those first several hundred years after the time of Jesus was because the church had a commitment to life. And so if the church is a family, if we got to put our money where our mouth is. And if we're going to say abortion is wrong, we would see it limited or ended somehow. Fine. Are you taking the babies? My house is full. Are you taking them? I said that as a joke, and my wife's like, we'll take them. What are you talking about? We'll take them. Listen, the church ought to feel like family. And for people who are hurting, that's 10 times more true. This ought to be a place where they can come and know that they will be loved no matter what kind of garbage is going on in their life. Because we're family. That's part of it. That's one side of the lens. Here's the other one. That the home should work like church. The home should work like church. One of the clearest instructions in the Bible about how families of faith should function is that we ought to be like discipleship factories, just cranking out disciples. Parents and grandparents, our job is not to make sure our kids go to a great college and get an awesome job and marry a 10, right? That's not our priority. Our priority, parents and grandparents, is that our kids love Jesus, that they follow him, We ought to be discipleship factories. And that's been true since the time of Moses. Let's look at this passage. Turn, if you haven't yet, to Deuteronomy chapter 6. I want to have Nick read this for us. This is Moses setting up kind of how a family of faith should work. Look at this. Nick, would you read this passage for us?
Yep. Deuteronomy 6, beginning in verse 4, says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home, when you walk along the road, when you lie down, when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands, bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates."
See, what Moses is doing in this passage is he is giving Israel a mandate that their home should work like church. Now, some of you are like, "Church, this is way before Acts 2. What are you talking about?" One of the most common terms for the nation of Israel in the Old Testament is the assembly. That's how the English translation of the word. Do you know what it is in the Greek translation of the Old Testament? Ekklesia, the word we normally translate church. For Israel, as the people of God, you also have to remember, it's a theocracy, right? So, like, just structurally, the way they function is they function like the church. And for Israel, to hear is to obey. So when you see in the text that Nick read, "Hear, O Israel," what you need to be thinking is, you better do this. To hear at that level, and by the way, in the original Hebrew text, the word "hear" and the word "one," the Lord our God, the Lord is one, are both bigger in the original. Like, there's literally a font change. In the original handwritten manuscripts that we have, those words are bigger. God is, "Listen to this. Hear this. Do this," God is saying. He's not asking you to separate out, like, "Well, this is how you love God with your mind, and this is how you love God with your heart, and this is how you love God with your strength." This is comprehensive. This, you love God with everything you are, by just weaving it into daily family life. When you walk on the road, when you sit down at dinner, when you lie down at night. It's not like a specific plan. He's just saying, you just need to weave this into every aspect of family life. Now, here's what's amazing. The word translated "impress" in this passage is actually the Hebrew word for wet or sharpen. W-H-E-T, wet, like a whetstone, right? Anybody in here ever used a whetstone sharpen a knife? Yeah. Over and over again. What's he saying? He said, you just keep taking opportunities to sharpen your kids. Over, you impress them, and it's in the intensive form. So it's this, it's not just repeat, it's over and over and over again. You're impressing this on your kids. They're supposed to talk about God all the time, right? Now, and he says, bind this to your body. Now, Orthodox Jews today have taken this literally. I got to see this happen. So in 2016, I got to go to Israel on a study trip. And like, the pilot came over the air and he said, in 1 hour, we'll enter Israeli airspace or whatever. And as soon as the pilot said that, like, a bunch of men got up, which, you know, I mean, that part of the world, if you don't know, if you're, you know, I'm like, what are they doing? They all went to the bathroom to wash. And then they came back and they start taking these little boxes, the phylacteries. It's got this verse written on a little bit of a scroll in this box. And they're literally binding it to their head. And it's got this verse in a little box that they bind, and they're winding this leather strap around their arm. They're literally binding it to their body. They took it literally, but I think what Moses meant is more figurative here. He's saying, weave this into the experience of your family. Just make this part of your daily rhythm. Nick, what are some practical ways that our families can do this beyond just strapping it to their head?
So I want to give you another book that is really great called Family Discipleship. So I think this is on the screen. Yeah, Matt Chandler and Adam Griffin. This is, not only some nuts and bolts, but practical, you know, plan for trying to go, okay, we're not, you know, applying this in a literal sense, but how is this lived out? in our daily lives, in our families. And so just to kind of summarize a whole book worth of material into three words, so that it can be something we can all grab a hold of today. The three words I want to give you from family discipleship are, we disciple our families through time, through moments, and through milestones. And so they spend a lot of time kind of setting that up and giving you, you know, some of the background of this, like we're doing here today. But what the authors mean by intentionally discipling through the time that we have is, you know, thinking about your schedule, thinking about your rhythm when it comes to your family, and going, okay, with the moments that we have, with the years that we have, you know, what are we doing with this amount of time that God's entrusted to us? So the time part is the intentionality that we take. You know, just as we are intentional in so many different ways with, you know, equipping our kids to be good athletes, or, you know, helping them with their GPA, or, you know, pass a class. It's like spiritually, what's happening in the way that we're intentionally helping to form over and over these repeated rhythms of being Jesus focused in our families. So time is the intentional one. Moments.
Hang on. So time would be like your daily devotions around the table.
Yep.
Right? Just those daily rhythms. Or when I was a kid growing up, we were not allowed to leave the house until mom had prayed for us. Like, she would literally make us late for the bus. We had to run. What? I didn't pray. We got to pray. And it was just every day. You can't walk out the door until we pray.
Yep.
That kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, for our girls, it's, you know, tucking them in bed at night still, even. Love that. You know, opportunity to pray together at the end of the day. Or, you know, every other Wednesday, we have a family night that we try really hard to protect. And sometimes that consists of, you know, we go out to eat to a new place that we haven't tried before, and then we try to tie some sort of an object lesson in that, you know, really helps us kind of think about a gospel-centered spiritual truth. What I love is one night the girls were, my girls, Nora is a freshman, Macy's in seventh grade, are like, we want to lead family night, you know, tonight. So I was like, all right, cool. And my daughter Nora calls it bringing the preach. She's like, I'm going to bring the preach tonight.
I love that.
You know,
I'm totally stealing that. Yeah, so that's awesome.
It's bringing the preach.
We're going to bring the preach.
That's what we're doing right now. So, but I love that, you know, because, you learn from one another, right? I mean, you know, in those conversations, you take some intentionality to set something up, but man, you're learning from that childlike faith that's already been referenced before, and, you know, just being inspired. You know, it's a beautiful thing, the way that God puts us together as his people. So that's intentional. The second part of the book talks about moments that are seized. And sometimes those are just kind of that everyday, you know, sort of stuff that happens where you're like, oh man, this wasn't planned, but this is a teachable moment. So we were going to Home Depot the other night to like look for 2x4s and check the clearance aisle, you know, and stuff. Like, that's what, you know, they give me a hard time because that's what I like to do, you know. And, hey, we're going by, you know, anyway. As we're doing that, my daughters, who were listening to the sermon last week, the race lens, you know, talking about, you know, just skin pigment, you know, they're like, oh, we need to go to the paint section because we need to check and see, you know, what Casey referenced that last week in his sermon.
What,
you know,
what color is your skin?
Just kind of a passing comment, but it's like, all right, cool. You know, here's a moment that we can seize to reference back to something that happened on Sunday, and, you know, just continuing to engage that way. And we all have those, right? You know, it's like, this wasn't planned, but here we go. Sometimes it's a little more heavy. You know, you're around the dinner table, or you're walking alongside of a friend, and it's like, you know, something happens, or your kids are exposed to something. You're like, well, this wasn't the timing or plan that I thought this was going to happen in, but like, all right, here we go. Like, let's have a conversation. Let's be honest. Let's be real. Let's be transparent. And as they see that in you, they see sometimes the struggle that even you have, that vulnerability that you have to go, hey, I'm just clinging to God with all that I've got here. I'm needing his grace as much as, you know, we all do, but season a moment. And then the third one that they talk about in the book is being really intentional with milestones. You know, when we think about milestones, we just celebrated one here this morning with these young families, you know, but you think about, you know, and I love the different things we're talking about. Loves to smile, right now, you know. You know, and, but those things, we celebrate those, right? You know, getting into preschool, graduating kindergarten, jumping into things that you're doing in elementary or middle school, first dance, you're getting your driver's license, you graduate in high school. And we try to do that as a church family with with those that are a part of this body. But, you know, the book just kind of lays out some opportunities for you to really make those special in a discipling sort of way that help, you know, come alongside your students when it's like, all right, you're moving from childhood to like adolescence. You know, there's a different level of stuff here. You're moving from adolescence to early adulthood. Like, let's talk about what it's like to be a man or to be a young lady of faith, you know, and to pass that along in some ways that are practical applications of that text, you know, that we're talking about here this morning.
And you know, you don't have to do all the things that they say, right? But you might get an idea that would revolutionize your family story. It'd change it.
Yeah. And so, you know, for us, I mentioned a couple of those earlier, like family night, but, you know, sometimes a moment might be like, you know, my girls coming alongside to like a parent life gathering and rocking babies. You know, man, they're so good at that. You know, or, you know, going on a mission trip together as a family. You know, serving together at the food pantry, you know, like many of you do with your family, or sometimes it's just even extending hospitality at your home, right? Where you're not only seizing those moments and having intentional time, but other people jump in on that, you know, and they get to experience the light of Jesus, you know, shining through what you're trying to cling to, you know, but it's just simple ways that as we invite Christ into our everyday, you know, moments, he can be magnified and discipleship happens and the family really does start to look like the church.
Yeah, yeah. You've got an opportunity to tell a different story. Your family story might not have, like you would, boy, you'd do some massive editing. It maybe didn't turn out the way you hoped. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, you can't go back and change the way it was, but you can start a new chapter. You can decide today, all right, we're gonna do things different. We're gonna make a difference. Or you can, maybe you've got friends whose family story has just gone off the rails. Are you praying for them? Are you coming alongside them and saying, man, how about, tell you what, we'd love to send you guys to the Rapha Restoration Ministry weekend for your marriage. We'll watch the kids. You need to go. Right? Like, there's so many ways that you can do that.
Yeah. So what rhythms are we creating as a family, and what story is our family telling together? And if you don't like that story, as you said, it's like, all right, let's take a hold of God's intent for this and live it out in a way that he leads, writing a new chapter with Jesus at the center.
Yeah. I mean, God is still writing the story of our family, right? I've got one who's married, and the littlest one just got potty trained not long ago. So, you know, span. But if there's anything we've done right, I think, it's just making discipleship the focus of our home. I don't really care what college they go to. Ozark! But I don't really... are they going to go get... be huge in business or show, I don't care. I want you to love Jesus. And when that becomes the focus of your home, the home becomes like church, you know.
Let me go back to this quote I skipped.
Yeah, 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 it's good.
So, you know, we think, okay, here's some practical stuff, but like this is gonna cost something, right? Mm-hmm. You know, if you're gonna prioritize intentional time, you know, in a different way, that's going to be costly in the sense that it's going to take time away from something else. Or maybe it's going to require the fact that, like, well, I mean, I haven't been really intentional with the story I've been writing, so intentionality is going to cost me something. There's a quote by Dallas Willard that I love that he's actually referring to the book The Cost of Discipleship by Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Mm-hmm. So some people, when they hear about discipleship, or you think, okay, family discipleship, man, it seems like a you know, the nuts and bolts of that. How can I even, you know, possibly attain that? It's so costly. But his quote is saying, the cost of non-discipleship oftentimes is even greater. And here's the quote. He says, "Non-discipleship costs us abiding peace. It costs us a life penetrated throughout by love. It costs a faith that sees everything in light of God's overriding governance for good. Hopefulness that stands firm in the most discouraging of circumstances. Power to do what's right and withstand the forces of evil. In short, it costs us exactly the abundance of life that Jesus said he came to bring in John 10:10.
Will there be a cost to this? Absolutely. It's worth it. Totally, totally worth it. And not doing it has its own cost. When my parents were kids, Parker Brothers came out with a board game called Going to Jerusalem. Here's a picture of the game. Been around a while, right? Your playing piece isn't a top hat or a Scotty dog, like in that worldly game Monopoly. No, this is a Christian game, right? And so you get to be a real disciple. So your little marker is like a little dude in a robe with a beard and sandals and a staff. He's a disciple. And so to move across the board, right, you roll the dice and then you look up answers that are provided in a little Bible that came with the game, right? So here's the game board, right? And, you know, you start in Bethlehem and you kind of make your way around the board to the Mount of Olives and Bethsaida and Capernaum and Galilee and Nazareth and wilderness and Bethany. And if you roll the dice really well, you get to end with the triumphal entry in Jerusalem. But see, here's the thing. There's no crucifixion and no resurrection. There are no angry Pharisees, no demon-possessed people. Trouble and temptation are only hinted at. Perfect game for a Christian family on a Sunday afternoon. Listen, if that's your expectation of what it means to have a Christian family, I have some bad news for you. Land in North Dakota is more expensive than you think. Because that's where you're going to have to move to make that a reality. All off by yourself. A major part of having a Christian worldview is understanding that the church is the best found family on earth. And that we come around each other when our home life maybe isn't awesome. We become family for each other. And our home then works like a little discipleship factory.
I'm so thankful for God who meets us when life isn't like a happy little board game, right? In the reality of what we experience, because we know in the picture of life that we're living, man, it requires us to die to ourselves daily, right? Jesus told us that would be the case. But our lived experience that requires the Holy Spirit to be front and center, requires that continual wisdom and those one-word prayers that sometimes are like, help God, I don't have this right now in this moment. I'm thankful that he shows up. That he puts his grace, that he puts his mercy on display in amazing ways. And it happens that when we do that, we find ourselves following Jesus to those places where he went, to the lost, to the least, to the marginalized. In those places that sometimes on the surface, people are like, man, I don't know, this seems too far gone. This seems hopeless. This seems like, can this story change? Can something different be written? But I'm so thankful that we time and time again find Jesus at his best, breathing life into things that seem dead. Yeah. Changing a story for eternity that maybe seemed hopeless. Writing a way different story than we could have ever imagined because we're holding on to him in the midst of the process. And I love that as we do that, we start to, and we see some rich things that God intended in the life of the family. We see some and experience some rich things in the life of the church. And what a beautiful thing it is when we know what he calls us to do, but then we're willing, even as hard as it might be, just to take the first step.
Yeah, I want to make sure you get this, and we'll let you go. Jesus intends for you to see home life and church life through each other's lens. You're a family. Live like it. Invite other people to be part of it. and then turn your home into this. Turn your home into a discipleship factory. And when you do that, then you're looking through the family lens. You've got an opportunity to respond to this today. Maybe you need to join the family of God. Maybe you've never been baptized. You've never given your life to Jesus. You're going to have an opportunity to do that. As we sing, I would invite you to come forward, make that profession, make that decision. Maybe today your family's hurting. You came in here like, ow, man, that sermon stung. We would love to pray with you. We'd love to know so we can come alongside you and be family for you. And if you want that, we're going to be up front. We'd be happy to pray with you during this time. Maybe you know a family who's struggling and your decision is, I'm going to make a phone call when I get home. I got to come alongside some people who are hurting right now. I'm going to ask you to stand with me and we're going to sing together and you respond as God leads you today.